It's a historic night in Istanbul as Başakşehir beat Manchester United.
They do have options arriving to the right. It's Edin Visca for 2-0. And it's the captain who scores to double the lead for Istanbul Başakşehir.
There's another shock in Group H as Leipzig overpower Paris.
Forsberg, long, straight run up, and Forsberg scores. And from a goal down, Leipzig lead Paris by 2-1.
And Ronaldo returns for Juventus, but it's their other forwards who steal the headlines in Hungary.
Once again, Paulo Dybala profits from Ferencváros. They've been gifted two late goals. Dybala has two, Morata has two.
Gerard Piqué is Barcelona's match winner. There's a stunning comeback from Sevilla, and Chelsea and Dortmund cruise to victories. We'll bring you the best reaction on Match Day Live. Welcome along, I'm Rob Daly, and we're going to reflect on Match Day 3. I'm joined by commentators Mark Scott and Jonathan Beck, and we have European football expert Kevin Hatchard. On Tuesday we saw loads of goals, Kevin. On Wednesday we've had a few shocks as well, which has made the groups very interesting.
Yeah, some really interesting games, some historic wins, some superb performances, and some really good coaching as well. We've seen that with Sevilla, and we've also seen that with RB Leipzig. So we've had the full set.
Let's get some three-word match reports then as well. Mark Scott was watching Leipzig-Paris. Mark, your three magic words, please.
Nagelsmann knows best.
And why have you gone for that, Mark?
because we somewhat doubted him with the way that the game started, with the high press from Leipzig leaving them looking a bit exposed, especially with Moise Kean causing some real problems for them round the back. And they had a couple of close shaves when Di Maria nearly ran from inside his own half to score. But Julian Nagelsmann knew what he was up to and just needed to tweak things. And in the second half, they came back into it. They exerted a bit more control and authority. They were helped by the fact that Idrissa Gueye was sent off for two yellow cards midway through the second period. But overall, he stuck to his game plan. He said that lessons had been learnt from their chastening defeat away to Manchester United in the UEFA Champions League last week. And he knows what he's doing, doesn't he? I mean, it makes you a little bit sick when you think that he's 33 years of age.
Jonathan Beck, meanwhile, was watching Ferencváros versus Juventus. Jonathan, your three-word match report and why?
It's fairly self-explanatory. Juve's 100th win.
Well, we start in Group H then, and we begin with one of the biggest shots of Match Day 3 as Manchester United took on the Turkish champions, Başakşehir.
Cleared away by the Turkish champions, where Demba Ba was the furthest forward. He's able to bring it down. He's got a clear run on goal here. Demba Ba up towards the edge of the area, finds the bottom corner for Başakşehir. And some start to the story. Istanbul, Başakşehir 1, Manchester United 0. Ball won back by Denis Turic. Demba Ba letting it run. And they do have options arriving to the right. It's Edin Visca for 2-0. And it's the captain who scores to double the lead for Istanbul, Başakşehir. What have Manchester United got here? They come again with Shaw. Oh, and it's a free header in there for Anthony Martial to change the dynamic maybe before the break. It is the swift response from Manchester United that they required. It is Başakşehir 2, Manchester United 1. That is the full-time whistle, and that is a first-ever victory in the UEFA Champions League for Istanbul Başakşehir. They were hanging on at the end, but they have beaten Manchester United.
Phil Blacker was our commentator for this one, but Mark and Kev join me on the show now. Kev, it is another disappointing night for Manchester United, and while their Champions League campaign to this point has been very good, they're so up and down at the moment.
Yeah, they're impossible to predict. I mean, you have to give Istanbul Başakşehir massive credit because it's a historic win for them. It's a really impressive display. Also, you know, determined defending right at the end, hacking that ball off the line in an almost impossible way. So, I'd like to give a huge amount of credit to them. But the thing I think with Manchester United is, when they're not given that space to counter-attack, when they don't have those opportunities that Leipzig, say, gave them last week, they do find it difficult to open up those spaces, and they find it difficult to dominate games. And I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer we have praised him quite rightly for tactical masterclasses in the first two games. I mean, the performance in Paris was excellent because they set up with the back five and that worked. And when the game was slightly going against them, switched to a back four, brought on Paul Pogba, much more positive. Against Leipzig, got it spot on as well, exploited the high defensive line, excellent in the closing stages. But you look at some of the really disappointing displays and you look at the way they pile up, and it's all the more baffling because you know what they can do, you know what Solskjaer can do as a coach. Why can't they do it on a more regular basis? And that's the big question mark that hangs over the club at the moment.
We'll give Istanbul Besiktas here their respect very shortly because they certainly deserve it for a fine result tonight. Mark, you were up at St James's Park for Newcastle versus Manchester United recently, and it seemed to be that was a big performance from United that day.
Yeah, it's so hard to predict what you're going to get from them, as Kevin was just saying, because they're so up and down. And, you know, they had that really good performance against Newcastle. I did the game as well against Leipzig when they blew them away. Solskjaer got his tactics spot on, shocked the, you know, much vaunted Julian Nagelsmann with his diamond midfield in that one that really caught Leipzig cold. And then they go and turn in a really tepid performance against Arsenal in the English Premier League over the weekend and just were not at the races this evening. Credit to Besiktas here as well, as you say, but they'll be desperately disappointed with what they've shown there. And it's such a conundrum. You cannot, you know, put your finger on what is going on at Manchester United at the moment. We know they have the quality and the ability, but, you know, they are blowing so hot and cold at the moment.
It's one of the things we love about the UEFA Champions League, that even though there are teams that don't have history in this competition, even though there are teams that are by no means favourites going into these games, you look at Besiktas here and you look at the experience they have. Guys like Demba Ba, Edin Visca has been around for quite a while and has been performing well in the UEFA Europa League in previous seasons. And they have guys that if you give them the opportunity to shine, they can. And if you're not quite at it, and Manchester United weren't, then these teams will take advantage of that. And it shows you the strength in depth in this competition.
We'll hear from a very disappointed United boss, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in a moment. But first, their midfielder, Bruno Fernandes.
Today was everything bad. Our intensity in the beginning of the game was wrong, was not good enough. They are more aggressive than us. They come more aggressive in the duels. They play with more confidence. They have more quality on the ball. They do everything better than us. So I think that was the point. We lose the game because we are not ready to come in, to come outside to the game and do the hard game we have to do. The responsibility we have to play for a such big team is coming to every pitch and win. And of course, after this game today, and it's a such difficult defeat for us, and we have to do much, much better.
It's very difficult because they are a well-organized team, a good coach with the a good setup. They defended really well and two very good goals on counter-attacks. Bad defending by us, but still good goals by them. When you are in the Champions League, in the Premier League, you have to perform better. We didn't perform well enough. We play against good teams, of course, and that's there's also reasons. But for us, we know that we can perform better than this, and we're not happy with ourselves today, no.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer there. Demba Ba, by the way, with his first half goal after United were all flooded inside the Istanbul Besiktas here half. He was completely free on the halfway line. Long ball forward. He raced through to slot in the opening goal, which he took very well and did have shades of his Chelsea goal against Liverpool from the famous Gerrard slip incident. He led the line tonight for an Istanbul Besiktas here side, Kev, that really fought for the points. And I think it's hard to understate just how big that result would be. This was their glamour tie, really, wasn't it, in the group stage, to host Manchester United.
You could argue it's the greatest moment in their relatively short history, because they're not one of the big Istanbul giants in the sense that they don't have the history or cachet maybe of a Fenerbahce or a Galatasaray or a Besiktas, but they have been successful for a while now. They were knocking on the door in the title race for a few seasons, and they finally got over the line and won the Turkish Super League. So to get to this stage is the first thing. To beat a club like Manchester United is an immense achievement, and their fans will be delirious about this. I mean, it's obviously, as we know, it's a shame that, you know, fans can't be present at games as much as we would like them to be, and there are very good reasons for that, of course. But this is absolutely huge. I mean, how proud will they be to see Başakşehir here beat Manchester United? And I think we look at United sometimes and we think, oh, well, they're inconsistent and things haven't, you know, always been great since Sir Alex Ferguson stepped down. But it's still one of the world's biggest football clubs. It doesn't matter how they're doing in some ways. To beat them is a massive scalp to take. So this is massive for them. And also, when you bear in mind, they've not started the season very well domestically.
Yep.
So this could actually be a springboard for them to put some wins together, because they'll have massive belief now.
First goals, first points, first win for Istanbul Başakşehir in the UEFA Champions League. Also in Group H, Leipzig hosted last season's runners-up. Mark Scott was our commentator.
Keane has robbed of Meccano of the ball here. Clever pass through as well. Opportunity and goal. Di Maria scores. Lovely finish from Angel Di Maria. An error from Upamecano is punished in some fashion. Clever pass from Keane. Lovely finish, Di Maria. Leipzig 0, Paris 1. And a penalty is awarded for handball. Moise Kean swiveled and smashed goalwards. And it's off the arm of the unfortunate Deod Upamecano. Curved run-up from Di Maria. It's saved by Galacci, and then the rebound is bundled clear as well. Wolfsburg on the left wing has two Paris players in attendance. Clever pass to Angelino, who tees it up on the edge of the area, and the first time hit is in wonderfully well from Nkunku. That is a splendid strike to level it up for Leipzig. Leipzig are inquiring about whether they should have a penalty kick. They will be taking a look at it, VAR, and his decision is penalty. Wolfsburg, long, straight run-up, and Wolfsburg scores into the left corner, just snuck under the arm of Keylor Navas, who guessed right and got across but couldn't get down quickly enough. And from a goal down, Leipzig lead Paris by 2-1.
Mark was our commentator for this one. Mark, did Leipzig deserve their 3 points tonight in the east of Germany?
Yeah, overall, they did, because they fought back well after a bit of a shaky start, and Julian Nagelsmann tweaked some things, injected a bit of urgency into them in the second half. I mean, it was a game, you know, forgive the expression, a game of two halves, because Paris were the better side in the first 45 minutes. How different it could have been had Angel Di Maria stuck away the penalty to make it 2-0, because then, you know, we may not have seen that kind of recovery from the German side after the break. But the goal from Nkunku just before the interval changed the complexion of things. I wonder if Julian Nagelsmann may have made some changes to personnel at the interval had they not been on level terms going in at the break. They were. They came out with a renewed sense of vigour. They seemed to have a bit more composure in possession. And yeah, overall on the balance of play, they certainly did deserve the victory. And Paris didn't really deserve anything because of their lack of discipline with the two dismissals that they suffered.
I think the key word here for Leipzig's bravery, because it's very easy when things aren't going well tactically, especially if you've been smacked at Old Trafford the week before, to actually abandon the plan and think, well, Paris are going to get in every single time they play a direct pass. We're 2-on-2 with their two forwards and two centre-backs, because they were committing so many men forward. The key to changing that was a much more efficient press in the second half. The key word that Mark mentioned, urgency. They were much more urgent because Paris were finding it easy to play through that press in the first half. They were playing with composure. And I think it really discomforted them because they couldn't get out suddenly. Emil Forsberg was making really intelligent runs. Danny Olmo played well. Christopher Nkunku scored a brilliant goal. He's so good at that. Just one touch to control on the edge of the area, found the bottom corner. Positives for Paris, mainly Moise Kean's performance, because I thought he was sensational, really took the fight to Leipzig. But we talked about the lack of creativity from that midfield area in the defeat to Manchester United, and it reared its ugly head again in this game, because if you've got Idrissa Gueye, you've got Ander Herrera, you've got Marquinhos, that's fine, it's ever so solid. If you've got Neymar and Kylian Mbappe ahead of that doing what they do, fine, you've set the platform for them. But they set the platform and had nobody really to stand on it. And so they weren't able to engage Leipzig in the way that they could early in the game. And I think that's a big worry for Thomas Tuchel, because if those main guys aren't there, who's stepping up?
I think from memory, Marcus, well, there was two disallowed goals. Is that right for Paris Saint-Germain in that first half?
Yeah, for offside, both tight calls, but both the right calls, Angel Di Maria. This was when the high line of Leipzig was causing problems for the home side, when Di Maria tried to bend his run, and if the ball had been played a bit earlier, he would have been inside his own half when he latched onto that pass over the top, and the goal would have stood. One thing that's worth bearing in mind as well is that with those two dismissals, they'll obviously be suspended for the return match, and they're already decimated, aren't they, with a lack of personnel. So big problems for Thomas Tuchel. You know, they were in a tight spot before this game, and now, you know, it's almost win or bust for them in the next game against Leipzig.
One thing I would say about Idrissa Gueye's dismissal, both for challenges on Amadou Haidara, who is a player that has taken a while to find his role in this Leipzig team. He's mainly playing because Konrad Laimer, who's a really key player for them, is injured at the moment. But he's taken his chance, and he played with such energy and such force in that second half that it was forcing very experienced and usually very solid guys like Idrissa Gueye into challenges he would never normally make. And so that's down to Leipzig's positivity and their energy.
So Leipzig with the win. The two sides meet again on the 24th of November. No Mbappe, no Neymar, no Icardi, no Draxler, no Verratti, no Bernat tonight. And no Idrissa Gueye or Kimpembe for the second leg through suspension. We'll see what shape Paris Saint-Germain are in a couple of weeks' time. To Hungary next in Group G. Juventus travel to Ferencváros with Cristiano Ronaldo returning to European action after testing positive for COVID-19 last month. Jonathan Beck was watching this one.
Cuadrado's beaten the offside trap down the right-hand side. It was a lovely ball through. He's got three to aim for, and Morata has scored on his 100th appearance for Juve. Gets yet another goal back in now, the orange and black. It's Ferencváros 0, Juventus 1. Ronaldo, right-hand side, infield. Oh, lovely shot, lovely goal. Stepped over by Weston McKennie, and Alvaro Morata has got two. On his 100th appearance, he's guiding Juve to a 100th UEFA Champions League win. He can do no wrong at the moment. It's Ferencváros 0, Juventus 2. Oh, it's an awful back pass, and Dybala has walked it in. The goalkeeper slipped on the turf with the pace of the back pass from the right-hand side. It's an awful mess for Ferencváros, and Juventus now lead by 3-0. Oh, they've given it away again at the back. The goalkeeper's made a real mess, and it's in the back of the net again. They've been gifted two late goals. Dybala has two, Morata has two. It's Ferencváros 0, Juventus 4.
Ferencváros would pull one back late on, but a comfortable win for Juve. And Jonathan Beck joins Kevin, Mark and myself. Now, I want to talk about Alvaro Morata, because we talked about him before kickoff. Jonathan, what a season he is having back in the shirt of the Bianconeri.
It's brilliant, isn't it? 6 goals now in 6 games for a player who, since he left Juventus over the 4 years, has at times looked bereft of confidence and direction. And Maurizio Sarri tried to pick him up and put the arm around him that he needed while he was at Chelsea and looked a shadow of the player that they thought they were getting. But coming back, well, it seems to have been the right move, doesn't it? 31 goals in his previous 99 appearances. It's now 33 in 100 for Alvaro Morata. And I think the people talking before the game were right that the partnership with Cristiano Ronaldo from the start, rather than with Paulo Dybala, was the one that would engage him the best. There was just one assist from Ronaldo, but it was for Morata's second goal. Stepped over brilliantly on the edge of the area by Weston McKennie, who left the path free for Alvaro Morata. And I think that could be the partnership going forward. It's a second 4-1 win in a row after they won at the weekend against Spezia. And for Andrea Pirlo, his project, as he keeps calling it, is starting to come together after a limited pre-season and integrating new players. It was a very more familiar squad tonight, and he got a very familiar result.
Always felt that Alvaro Morata is a player that needs to feel trusted and needs to feel comfortable in his surroundings, and he certainly seems to have that trust at Juventus. Jonathan, Ferencváros has done so well to get to this stage. It's a massive achievement for them, for the country, for Hungarian football. This is absolutely massive for them to be taking on teams like Barcelona, like Juventus. But to what extent did their inexperience play a part tonight, do you think?
Certainly at the back, yeah, those two goals. I mean, Bolly's goal came too late anyway. But at 2-0, you know, 73 minutes on the clock when Dybala gets his first, I think there's a combination of factors. The rain fell all night really heavy. The pitch was really slow and really quite boggy, and it didn't help with the goalkeeper. The pass back from Mia Blažić, who had denied Ronaldo a goal in the first half, was a difficult one. He overhit it to compensate, I think, for the fact the pitch was slow and to try and get it back, and he really gave it too much. The keeper couldn't feel that. It went straight to Paulo Dybala, and then the goalkeeper himself, looking to play out to the right of his area, hit Dybala, who went for goal himself, and it ended up going in off the bar off Lasha Diwali, who was trying to clear it. They were good in the first half. You know, when it was 1-0, Alexander Zubkov had a really good chance to equalise, and they didn't get a shot on target until very late on in the game, Ferencvaros. So they looked good on the ball, coming forward on the counter-attack. They didn't have the cutting edge in that final third. And yes, I think their inexperience, their determination to play out from the back is admirable, but they didn't have the players to do it, unfortunately.
Well, they now, Juve, move on to 6 points. Ferencvaros stay on 1 point, as do Dynamo Kiev after their 2-1 defeat to Barcelona. Leo Messi with an early penalty, which he won and tucked away on 5 minutes. Ansu Fati, who turned 18 a few days ago, whipped in a cross for Gerard Piqué to head in the second on 65. Sigankov turned in a rebound after a great save from Ter Stegen back from injury. He made a number of unbelievably good saves for Barcelona on his return to the first team after a knee problem. It looks now, Jonathan, with these sides all set to meet again, of course, on match day four, that Barcelona and Juventus, and despite the fact Juve lost on match day two, they're now in a good position to progress to the round of 16.
Yeah, 9 points Barcelona, 6 points Juventus in second, and as you say, Dynamo Kiev and Ferencvaros on just the 1 point at the bottom. Ferencvaros, yep, 25 years after their first appearance, doing brilliantly, a side that their chief exec, Paul Oroš, said were more attuned to the UEFA Europa League. So having come through right from the first qualifying round to face teams of this calibre, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? They really love to play Barcelona and Juventus at the same time as probably realising that it's a real battle for them now to get third place and that Europa League slot. That'll come down to the next three games after the international break. But Ronald Koeman's Barcelona, another work in progress, much more of a rebuilding job for him than Andrea Pirlo. But at the moment, sitting pretty, 3 wins out of 3.
Yeah, you'd take it. And it's a good point, because when you're an underdog and you enter the Champions League, you look at these glamour ties and you think, brilliant. And then about 5 minutes in, you realise how hard it is. So we'll have more from that group, of course, on match day four. Let's move to Group E now. Chelsea cruise to their second Champions League win of the season, beating Rennes 3-0 at Stamford Bridge. Midfielder Jorginho spoke to us afterwards.
I think we did a great job. I think we deserve a win. Another clean sheet, what's important for us. So I think it was a great night for us tonight. We need to keep working on this way, what we are doing, with a high level. So when you change one player or two players, and then the quality of the team doesn't go down, that's very important for a group, for a team. So we are very happy that we can count on all of us.
Jorginho there, the Chelsea midfielder, who clearly now is not the main penalty taker, because Timo Werner stepped up for two in that first half, the second of which resulted in a red card for a Rennes player. Meanwhile, then we had the Tammy Abraham goal 5 minutes after the restart for Chelsea, which really secured the 3 points. By the way, now, this is the first time in 10 years that Chelsea have kept 5 clean sheets in a row, which is quite extraordinary given, Kev, that people were saying that Chelsea was really struggling to defend, and it was evident they were conceding 2 or 3 goals in a game.
Well, it sounds really simple, but bringing in a new goalkeeper who is consistent, who is commanding, who exudes calm, has made a massive difference. Edouard Mendy coming in. It's not just that, but that is a massive role. I think that they've tweaked midfield. I think Frank Lampard has looked at how can we get the balance better in midfield. And I think we've seen Kai Havertz, not in this game, but in previous games, take on more of a selfless role maybe in midfield. And N'Golo Kante moving into a more traditional holding role. And I think that balance looks a bit better. In terms of Timo Werner being on penalties, as you well know, Rob, I'm on the board of the Timo Werner Appreciation yeah. Society.
Yeah, I thought you were president.
No, I was deposed, but we won't go into that. With him, it's all about him now feeling comfortable as a Chelsea player, but he has that fire in him. And I think Julian Nagelsmann worked with him on that as well, that belief that he can be a complete footballer. I think he improved last season massively as a Leipzig player and as an all-round player, not just goals, but assists as well. And I think he's so, so confident now. I think it was the right decision in the end to move to Chelsea early, to get used to the players, to get used to the surroundings. And he looks as if he's been there for about 5 years. I think he's made a superb start to the season.
Smashed in his penalties tonight. By the way, I've just realised for the first time in 10 years that five clean sheets in a row stat for Chelsea since Petr Cech was the goalkeeper. He's the man who said, let's sign Edouard Mendy from my former club, Rennes, who they've played today. Completely pointless coincidence that I've pointed
never
out.
Never pointless. Never pointless.
Let's hear from the Chelsea manager, Frank Lampard, next.
I think we deserved that in the way we played. The red card and the penalty at 2-0. Obviously makes it more comfortable. I think we dealt with the early parts of the second half really well. Not always easy with against 10 men when they've had a bit of time to talk and arrange themselves, and we kept the ball moving in the early parts of the second half. So professional elements of our game really good today. A good opposition as well. Tough game there. We couldn't underrate them. I think we saw that even with 11v11. They're a physical, technical team, and we won pretty well.
They were missing Camavinga tonight. A big loss for Rennes in midfield as they go down 3-0 to Chelsea. Meanwhile, Sevilla, what a result for them. They move on to 7 points with Chelsea. 2-0 down to Krasnodar. Pull it back to 2-1. Ivan Rakitic with a header. Then Jesus Navas gets himself sent off, bringing down a man through on goal. Then they score twice with 10 men in the second half. En-Nesyri off the bench to grab both goals. What a fight back from Lopetegui's side to win that game, Kev.
There's a real streak of steel in this squad, and we saw it in the UEFA Europa League last season, because against Manchester United in the semi-final, against Inter in the final, I felt, many people felt, they were underdogs, but they didn't believe that. They had total belief in the coach, Julen Lopetegui, total belief in their way of playing and each other. And we saw that in this game, because all of their experience was brought to bear, and Krasnodar, who had done really well to get into that position, when you think of how many players they have unavailable at the moment, so many key creative players, they had done a fabulous job, but they just don't have that experience. They're a little naive at this level. You've got to remember, it's an amazing adventure for them to have got to this group stage in the first place, and they are naturally finding it tough.
Let's move on to Group F. Just have to mention these results quickly. Great result for Borussia Dortmund. Erling Haaland with two goals ahead of Der Klassiker at the weekend in a 3-0 win at Club Brugge. Thorgan Hazard back in his home country with the other goal for Dortmund on the night. And Zenit with a 1-1 draw at home to Lazio. Late equaliser from Felipe Caicedo, 8 minutes from time, earning them a big point in Russia with the depleted team. No Ciro Immobile again. As we mentioned earlier, one of the shocks of the night was Leipzig beating Paris Saint-Germain 2-1. Emil Forsberg scored the penalty to win it. He was asked afterwards what he thought was the turning point in the match.
I have to say, I think Peter Gulacsi's save in the first half, the penalty from Di Maria, I think it was a really important moment for us, and he helped us a lot with that, also mentally, to be back in the game and to stay in the game. So I think that was a big key moment for us to see that he saved it. And then, of course, the way we played the whole game, I think we played with our heart and we put everything on the pitch. So it was important for us.
Emil Forsberg there, the match win. Let's go back to Mark Scott, our match commentator for Leipzig's win. Mark, man of the match, and why for this one?
I think actually Forsberg, not just because of that penalty, but in the second half, he embodied what Leipzig needed. A lot more energy and urgency, and he really got about the pitch and sort of shocked Paris.
Jonathan Beck, your man of the match for Juve's win tonight.
I think it has to be Alvaro Morata. Set the tone from the off. Two goals, the first two. Six in six games for him now. He looks reborn.
He certainly does. Kev Hatchard, you can pick anyone from any of the other games tonight.
Erling Haaland, two goals for Borussia Dortmund. He has 16 goals in 15 games for club and country this season. Remarkable.
On the board of the Timo Werner fan club, the founder of the Erling Haaland fan club. Kev, thank you very much for your company tonight. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Chelsea with a big win against Rennes, Sevilla 3, Krasnodar 2, Dortmund winning 3-0 at Club Brugge, Juve winning in Hungary, Barcelona and Leipzig getting home victories, along with Istanbul Başakşehir beating Manchester United incredibly by 2-1 in Group H. That is all we have time for this evening. We will be back on Tuesday the 24th of November from 6:30 p.m. Central European time for more live commentary, build-up and analysis. And don't forget to download our podcast shortly after every match night tonight using your favourite podcast provider. And don't forget to subscribe as well. But for now, from me and the rest of the UEFA.com Matchday Live team, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live.